You're listening to FMGRadio.com. Are you ready to take control of your physical, emotional, spiritual, professional, and financial health? Are you ready to experience great success in your life? Each week, join Dr. Diane A. Thompson and her guests for tools and strategies to help you take control of your health and inspire you to live your best life. Now here is your host, Dr. Diane A. Thompson.
Well, hello and welcome to Health Talk with Dr. Diane, MD. This is the show that's designed to inform and inspire you to a healthier lifestyle. I am your host, Diane A. Thompson, MD, and as always, it is my pleasure spending time with you on this broadcast with a goal that perhaps you may learn some piece of information that could improve your health and or your life. I will remind you that the information provided on this broadcast is for educational purposes only. This information should not be used for diagnosis or treatment. Please consult with your healthcare provider prior to making any changes to your health. All right, so for the entire month, we will be discussing a very important topic. This is a topic that affects so many women and their families. The topic is breast cancer. You know, according to the National Cancer Institute, the estimate for the new cases of breast cancer in 2013 is just over 230,000. And they estimate that almost 40,000 women will die of breast cancer. The number represents many mothers and sisters and daughters and wives. And so the goal of tonight's show is to provide accurate, up-to-date information about breast cancer so that maybe we can begin to decrease these numbers and save our women's lives. To help me do this is Dr. Jay Harness. Dr. Harness is a full-time breast surgeon with over 36 years of experience. He's the past president of the American Society of Breast Surgeons and Breast Surgery International. He has authored over 80 scientific articles and has written 21 book chapters. He's also the principal investigator for the National Cancer Institute Community Cancer Centers Program at the St. Joseph's Hospital Center for Cancer Prevention and Treatment in Orange County, California. Dr. Jay Harness, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, Diane. It's great to be here with you.
You know, I'm going to jump right in because we have so much wonderful information to share. And this is, you know, we hopefully can be able to educate more and more women about this deadly disease. So one of the things I'd like for you to briefly discuss is what are the current breast cancer screening recommendations? I know there have been changes over the years and there have been some controversy. So what are the current screening recommendations?
Well, you have sort of two groups. You have the federal panel that made one set of recommendations to start screening at age 50. That created a tremendous amount of controversy among all of us in the field. And quite frankly, what I do is to follow the guidelines of the American Cancer Association, which is really, I think, endorsed by the vast majority of physicians and advocacy groups in the world of breast cancer. Basically, Diane, what that's saying is start screening mammography in asymptomatic women at age 40 and to continue it annually. One of the big questions that comes up, what about when women hit age 70? And beyond, and I think the current thinking there is as long as people are healthy and could, if they needed to, undergo any kind of intervention from a surgical perspective or a medical oncology perspective, we should keep on screening. And so I'm one of those advocates out there in the U.S. that strongly believes in breast cancer screening beginning at age 40 and continuing there forward from there.
And I appreciate you mentioning it, the information in terms of the older women, because I've had women say that to me, you know, I am older, what is the point? But many of these women are very healthy, even though they may be in their late 60s and so forth. So it's actually great that you address that. Now, in terms of the controversy, I do remember also that one of the things that was mentioned, one of the findings they said was that too much screening was resulting in over-treatment of women with breast cancer. What's your take on that?
Yeah, there have been some very important retrospective studies that have come out, actually from Scandinavian countries and others. Now, I'm going to emphasize to your listeners that we're talking about retrospective studies of the death rates from breast cancer, the rates of diagnosis, et cetera. And they're saying that, well, since the death rate hasn't fallen that significantly, while the incidence has sort of gone up, or at least the number that we're diagnosing, ergo, therefore, we must be over-treating breast cancer. And, you know, when you do those kind of statistical analyses, that's easy to say in retrospect. When you have a patient with breast cancer sitting right in front of you, Diane, it's very difficult to know, at least in this point in time, what the natural history is going to be in the individual case. Now, does that make sense as I try and explain it to you and your listeners?
Absolutely.
Yeah, and so the future, here's where we're going in the future, and this is really important. Where we're going in the future is going to be more and more molecular and genomic analyses of breast cancers, comparing that to data that we know about what's happened with similar fingerprints, if you will, of what the genes of an individual cancer look like. And I think that we will reach a point in the future where we can say, oh, don't worry, this particular type of in situ breast cancer that you have is not going to do anything bad, and we've got the data to support it. But until we get to that point, unfortunately, I think we need to be treating people by the standard of care as we know it today.
Okay. And I know that one of the things that's out there, and again, a lot of questions, I've had done some community talks, and I've had women come up to me and ask questions about this. So one of the screening tools that's being used today is the mammography. And there have been talks of different types of mammography. Can you please talk a little bit about the 3D mammogram? How is this different? Should women be asking for this?
Yeah, the fancy medical term for this is called tomosynthesis. And you will remember in your training tomograms that took different slices, if you will. And so tomosynthesis, which has been nicknamed 3D ultrasound, takes different slices of the breast and then re-puts the images back together again. Our breast radiologists here in their private office have tomosynthesis and believe in it very strongly because they are having fewer callbacks from screening mammography. We're picking up subtle changes in the mammograms, particularly when a cancer has the fancy medical term spiculations, little prongs coming off of it. It appears that it may be easier to pick those kinds of findings up off of tomosynthesis. Now, our listeners need to know that we have not, Diane, invented the holy grail of breast imaging yet. And mammograms are good, and particularly people should be getting digital mammograms now, whether they're 2D or 3D, they should be digital. But what we need to remember is the denser the breast tissue, the little bit less sensitive that the mammograms are. And so in certain states now, here in California, I believe Texas, perhaps there in New York, there have been statutes passed that where women have, let's say, greater than 50% density of their breasts, we should say to them, you know, you may want to add some additional things to your breast screening. Probably one of the simplest things we can do is whole breast ultrasound. But better technologies are coming in the future in the densely breasted patient to help us sort out where the small early cancers are in that setting. Does that hopefully make sense to you?
Yes, that does. And can you comment also, you mentioned the ultrasound. What about in women who, for whatever reasons, are having, let's say there's a lump in the breast at a younger age, very young age. Is sonogram the appropriate way to go? Sometimes we'll see that they'll be sent for a sonogram. Some people will be sent for a mammogram. What is the appropriate way to go with, say, a young woman in her 20s?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. Certainly anybody under age 30 should start off with ultrasound for the palpable lump in the breast. As I think you know, the vast majority of these are going to be benign. A very high percentage of these are going to be fibroadenomas, which are benign overgrowth tumors. If I'm sitting in my office and my office person says I have a 22-year-old with a lump in the breast, greater than 9 times out of 10, that's going to be a benign fibroadenoma. So starting off with ultrasound and not exposing the younger breast to mammography is clearly the way to go as the initial evaluation. Now, let me flip this the other way around. The woman who has a lump in her breast, who let's say is in her 40s, and her primary care doctor says, oh, I'm going to get a mammogram, and the mammogram comes back negative. The mistake that is made there is not to follow up with the ultrasound, because a negative mammogram with a palpable lump in a 40-year-old could still be a cancer that could be seen on ultrasound but not seen with mammograms. And so to complete the workup of the palpable lump, certainly in women over age 40, ultrasound is clearly part of that workup.
That's great. I'm glad that you cleared up that information. And so we're actually going to take a short break for our sponsors. And when we return, I'm going to ask Dr. Harness to talk a little bit about calcification and the significance. So you want to stay with us for that information. We'll just take a short break.
You're listening to the FMG Radio Network, where our motto is have fun, make money, do good. We provide platforms to individuals who have a cause, message, or information that they would like to share with the world. If you'd like to join the FMG family and have your own radio show, please call us at 1-800-470-4982. That's 1-800-470-4982. We look forward to hearing from you.
Welcome back. You are, if you're just joining us, you are listening to Health Talk with Dr. Diane, MD, and my guest tonight is Dr. Jay Harness, and we are talking about breast cancer. And just before the break, I mentioned that we'll be talking about calcification. So, Dr. Harness, can you tell us what's the significance of calcification on a mammogram? Is there any link to breast cancer?
Diane, the answer is yes, but please, our listeners need to understand that calcifications per se don't indicate breast cancer. It's the pattern of the small calcifications that we call microcalcifications that can indeed be worrisome. Microcalcifications can be seen in the earliest kind of breast cancer called in situ breast cancer, meaning that there's been an overgrowth of cancerous cells inside the hollow ducts of the breast. As those cells fill up sort of the straw or the hollow ducts of the breast, if you will, in the center they lose their blood supply, the cells in the center can die, and our calcium that normally circulates through our blood can precipitate out or land, if you will, on that site and create little patterns of these tiny little dots, little microcalcifications. And so what the radiologists look at is the pattern of those, particularly if they have different sizes, and very particularly if they're branching, suggesting that they're actually inside the ductal system. Now, having said that, microcalcifications of the breast are also very, very common in women in their 40s with fibrocystic changes of the breast. And so what we don't want is for all women to think, oh my gosh, I've got microcalcifications, that means I've got cancer. We don't want you to think that, but we do want you to be going for your mammograms at qualified centers that are accredited not only by government agencies, but perhaps even a group like the National Accreditation Program for Breast Centers, where we've got qualified breast radiologists who can sort out the differences. And Diane, they may end up recommending a biopsy called a needle biopsy, usually directed by X-ray, and the fancy word for that is stereotactic core biopsy. So the bottom line is that microcalcifications and even larger calcifications can indeed occur in the breast, but we don't want people jumping out of their shoes thinking they necessarily have breast cancer.
This is good to know. And I actually am going to ask you to go back. You talked about the benign breast lump, the fibroadenoma. Has there been any risk, any noted risk of breast cancer in someone who has fibroadenoma?
Yeah, good question. That has actually been looked at. There's been sort of a mixed result of the studies that have looked at that. Bottom line is probably not any sort of significant increase in risk. Now, let's talk about fibroadenomas for a minute because they're pretty common. They're very common in women of color. So African-American women, Hispanic women, women from Asia, the Philippines, the incidence of fibroadenomas is more common in this group of women than it is in Caucasian women. Can't tell you why, because that would be obviously your next question. And also in women of color, they can be multiple in a breast, and particularly in the Hispanic population, and they can be seen in both breasts. They are typically a benign overgrowth. An extremely small percentage of these can go on to develop what's called a phalloides tumor, which, again, most of these are benign, and very, very rarely would those phalloides tumors ever go on to be something cancerous. And so, in general, I would say, Diane, that no, the incidence of breast cancer is not increased with just ordinary, simple fibroadenomas per se.
And so when these women who may develop fibroadenoma, at a young age, does the screening change at all?
It does not. No, family history would be the one important thing that would change the screening pattern. And if we talk about gene-positive patients like Angelina Jolie, then we may be talking about a different screening approach, particularly beginning in women at age 30. But no, fibroadenomas, the ordinary garden variety fibroadenomas without a strong family history for breast cancer or even a weak family history for breast cancer would not routinely change screening recommendations.
Wonderful. And this is a great segue into my next question regarding Angelina Jolie. I know she made the news when she opted for the bilateral mastectomy, and a lot of people were confused as to why she would make such a drastic move. And so I wonder if you could just talk a little bit about the BRCA-positive gene and what does it say for breast cancer, and what are the options women have when they are diagnosed with this?
Well, for BRCA1 and 2 gene-positive patients who have not developed breast cancer, the standard recommendations are to start screening mammography coupled with breast MRI at age 30 and to do it annually. I follow groups of patients who are both BRCA1 and 2 positive. They're seen annually. We stress the importance of the breast self-examination. Now, a very fascinating phenomenon has been going on in the United States over the past decade or more, and that is that more and more women are choosing preventative mastectomy in the light of very, very strong family histories, even that are not BRCA positive. And in those who are BRCA positive, there more women are choosing preventative mastectomies just like Angelina Jolie did. Now, Angelina Jolie's op-ed in the New York Times was really well-written. At breastcanceranswers.com, I immediately did a video congratulating her on the honesty of that op-ed. She was absolutely correct, Diane, in saying that she had reduced her risk of dying of breast cancer by 95% by having the preventative mastectomies. Now, people would say, well, gosh, Dr. Harness, why wasn't it 100% after all she had her breasts removed? Well, the answer to that question is that none of us as breast surgeons can tell patients that we have removed 1,000% of all microscopic breast tissue. Frankly, I just had a patient last week who had a preventative mastectomy 7 years ago by a highly qualified breast surgeon, a friend of mine, and here she comes with a lump in the preventative side. She also had been diagnosed with breast cancer on the other side, and that lump on the preventative side, Diane, indeed was worked up and found to be a breast cancer, and it probably arose out of one of these little microscopic areas that's left behind. So we've got more and more women choosing this approach. It is not a 100% guarantee, but it is certainly, I think, emotionally at least, improving the quality of life for many women who are choosing this route. But certainly acceptable is mammograms every year, digital mammograms every year, coupled with breast MRI.
So this electing to remove the breast is not something that you would recommend to someone who sat in your office, even if they had family history where multiple family members have died. Would you ever say, well, maybe this is the way to go?
It's a great question. Let me say that, number one. Number two, in the BRCA-positive patients who have already been diagnosed with breast cancer, generally we're going to treat the affected side with a mastectomy now. One of the things that's pushing women toward a mastectomy is that we have much better cosmetic results, particularly with nipple-sparing mastectomies. While you do lose sensation, we can give much better cosmetic outcomes to women. And then on the woman who comes and sits before me, and this happens about once or twice a month that I see a BRCA-positive patient, I will say, you know, we may want to strongly consider this on the other side. Cosmetically, we can also give better symmetry if we do it on the other side, but that's not a bottom-line reason to do it. In the patient, Diane, who is simply BRCA-positive, worried about this, I try and reassure them that once-a-year mammograms and MRI is a absolutely perfectly viable way to go. I share with them what I just said a few minutes ago, that it's not a 100% guarantee with preventative mastectomy. Obviously, surgery carries risk and downsides to it. I go through all that. But part of my role as a comprehensive breast surgeon is to offer people choices and options and try and assist them in the decision-making process. But the bottom line decision is always the patient's.
Well said, well said. Now, my final question for you is one I generally like to leave my listeners with a tip of the week. And I know with breast cancer, you know, many times we can reach out and we can tell exactly how to help prevent heart disease and so forth. For some people with breast cancer, it's not as tangible. And so I wonder if you were to advise someone as to what is the best thing that they can do to help protect themselves and to prevent breast cancer, what is it that you would share?
Yeah, that's a fabulous question, and I congratulate you for asking it. Really, the bottom line here is, interesting you would bring up heart disease, is to live a heart-healthy life. Get your weight under control. Get it as close as you can to ideal body weight. Exercise regularly. Eat a heart-healthy diet. One of the things that I see in my practice, particularly in postmenopausal women, is a feeling that we have a higher incidence in women who are overweight. There's no single prevention of breast cancer, but living heart healthy is one of the most important things that I can recommend to patients. having screening mammograms done on a regular basis. If we're going to diagnose breast cancer, we want to diagnose it at its earliest stage so we've got the greatest chance for survival. Think heart healthy.
And that's such sage advice. Now, Dr. Harness, where can our listeners get a hold of you? I know you have some wonderful information at your website that could further answer some of their questions. Can you share that website with us?
Yeah, the website is called Breast, www, and then it's all one long word, Breast Cancer Answers with an S, .com. We have, Diane, over 700 videos at our site. We've had nearly 7.2 million views of our videos. We have a very active Google Plus homepage where you could check us out at Breast Cancer Answers. We have a very active Facebook page, again, where you can like us and follow us at both of these pages, and we also stream on Twitter. And we would welcome people getting a hold of us that way. I practice in Orange County, California, the wonderful city of Orange. All you have to do is Google Dr. J. Harness, and you'll find me very easily.
Wonderful. Well, Dr. Harness, I thank you so much for joining us on the show and for sharing such wonderful information. There are so many women out there and their families who will benefit from this information. So I thank you very much. And I also encourage the listeners to go on to breastcanceranswers.com where you can get a lot more information about breast cancer. So once again, thank you, Dr. Harness.
Well, it's been my honor and privilege, and hopefully folks find the information useful.
All right. I'm sure they will. Thanks. Well, I do want to thank Dr. Harness for coming on the show. Again, his website is www.breastcanceranswers.com. You really want to go to that website. I actually found a wealth of information there, and, you know, this is information that can save your life. So check out his website and actually come back on my Facebook page and let me know what you think. I do want to thank you, listeners, for joining me again for another show. As many of you know, we've been picked up by another network and going to be putting more information out so that you guys can follow me there as well. I do encourage you to continue taking care of yourself. As I've often said to you, your health is your wealth. You don't want to wait until you lose it to recognize that. So thank you for listening. Do something healthy for yourself. As Dr. J. Harness said, a heart-healthy diet, that will take care of a lot of things. And I will see you on the broadcast, same time, same place. Take good care of yourself, everyone. Good evening.
You've been listening to Health Talk with Dr. Diane, M.D. For show replays and full guest bios, please be sure to visit fmgradio.com/Dr. Diane, M.D. That's D-R-D-I-A-N-E-M-D.